United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Sorry.
Case number 071032, Case University Petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Neil Petitioner, Ms. Dickey, the respondent.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. I think initially at the outset it's important to put this case in context by telling a little bit about the individuals we're dealing with. The employees at issue are adjunct teachers at a university. These are not your traditional part-timers who you would ordinarily see in the workplace who work 20 hours a week or 17 and a half hours a week. They are really people who are there 3 to 6 hours a week. And in fact, if you were to take the board's rationale here, someone who worked as little as 42 hours in their lifetime with the university would be included in the unit. Their semesters, they're appointed only for semesters. Semester is 14 weeks long. The number of adjuncts varies from 420 to 750, depending upon the semester you're in. And if you were to follow this decision, if someone were hired to work for the first time in the university as an adjunct and started working 3 hours a week, and if any of you have served as adjuncts, you know what I'm talking about. They're there very, very seldom, and yet the board would give them representational rights instead of calling them casuals. I realize that the scope of review of the labor board and their expertise is subject to very limited review by the court, but their discretion is not upheld when it's arbitrary and capricious, it's irrational, or they fail to follow their own precedents. And in this case, we think it's happened on many occasions.
Why wasn't all this argued at the representational hearing?
Your Honor, the representational hearing, the issue was addressed. It was addressed by counsel for the university at the time when asked by the hearing officer how they were going to deal with two issues. He said there are not two issues here. There's one issue. They're inextricably intertwined. The voter representation issue, I'm sorry, the voter eligibility issue and the unit placement are one issue. So he did raise the issue at that time. And what happened after that in terms of what the hearing officer and the regional director did with this really, I think it would be fair to say, at least led the university to believe that the issue of the casuals had been resolved. If you were to look at the first decision that was issued by the regional director directing an election, and if you look at the documents themselves, the first one is on pages 14 and 15 of the record. They include all adjunct faculty members. They put a footnote in about the voter eligibility. Then you go down to that footnote, and there is an error even in that footnote, what you would consider to be a typographical error. When they talk about eligibility, they say in the unit are those who, again, a bit of a typo, but clearly they set the voter eligibility. They then also go back to the exclusions of the unit. And what's excluded in the unit are casuals, which is relatively common in labor board proceedings. When you go down to the footnote when they define casuals, the regional director made another error. The error is that casuals are ineligible to vote, are those, and then they go on to define them as those who teach fewer than 3 credit hours in a semester. Now, that's an error because no casuals are eligible to vote. They're not in the unit, so their eligibility is not an issue. And that was raised by counsel at the time. He approached and he said basically footnote 13 makes no sense, and that was his assessment of that footnote. When the regional director came back, they changed the footnotes. In the footnote number 1, they left the voter eligibility the same, but then when they went to the description of a casual, it went on to describe casuals very clearly. It described them as those who don't fit the voter eligibility requirement and those who teach fewer than 3 hours.
But did he ever argue that the unit should include only people qualified to vote?
I think it would be fair to say that this is something other than a traditional unit.
No, and he never argued that, did he? He never said.
He took no position on the unit, Your Honor. And it's not his responsibility to do so. This is a non-traditional unit that the NLRB was trying to carve out. This isn't a factory with production workers. They're adjuncts. And there are cases all over the lot, whether you include people who are just there for that semester.
Wasn't it Pace's obligation to raise the issue, to put the issue squarely before the board, to say the unit should include only people who are eligible to vote?
No, Your Honor, it's not their responsibility. It's the Labor Board's responsibility in a representation proceeding.
Well, no, the Labor Board had a proposed unit that you didn't, that PACE didn't agree with, right? Isn't it PACE's obligation to say, well, we don't agree with that unit, it shouldn't be X, it should be Y, and then say what Y is?
Your Honor, the cases cited in the briefs show you very clearly it is not their responsibility. And when you read the tone of the regional director's decision,
they may never have to raise an issue before.
Absolutely not. It's up to the Labor Board to develop that record under the Act. Section 9 gives them that responsibility, and they're supposed to develop the record to decide who goes in and who doesn't go in and have enough facts in there to do it. And frankly, they had enough facts here. They had facts that these adjuncts teach only 3 to 6 hours a semester.
What I think we're trying to clarify here is that the burden of bringing forth the evidence, building the record, as you say, that's not the question. The question is when a record is presented, and if you don't agree with it, do you have any obligation to speak at that point? The board says you do.
When the issue was presented at the hearing, he did take a position.
What did he say?
He said that voter eligibility and unit inclusion are one and the same.
Right.
That's exactly what he said at the hearing. Then when the first decision came out and it didn't say that, he wrote a letter and said this is wrong. The second decision, the regional director's second decision, found it the way he found it. Here's what he said casuals are. These people who can't vote, they're casual. And it makes perfect sense. They're not there long enough. They don't have a nexus with the university. They have no connection. Only if you teach a certain number of years, if you show up at that university for a certain number of years, and they wouldn't even do it in 1 year. In other words, if they showed up to vote and said, I taught in the fall, this is the spring, I'm teaching again, I want to vote, they say, no, that's not enough. You have to do it over two of the last three academic years. You have to show that kind of nexus. And here they did, with all due respect, the unconscionable. They said, we're not only going to exclude you from voting. The minute after the election, the minute the certification comes out, they said, you hundreds of people who couldn't vote.
No, but let me ask you.
Now you're in the unit.
Are you suggesting then that the board's brief, page 7, misstates the facts? Misstates the record here? They cite to pages 112 and 113, where the hearing officer says there are two issues. One is eligibility to vote, the other scope of the bargaining unit. And then the university and the board recites how it was given 3 different opportunities to tell the hearing officer what its position was, said, we stand on our motion to dismiss.
Yes, Your Honor, but we cite in our brief the response to that. The response was, there are not two issues. There's one issue.
No, but the board is quoting the hearing officer's statement.
The hearing officer said there were two issues.
Yes.
And the university did not agree with that. They said there's one issue. The voter eligibility and the inclusion in the unit are inseparable.
One and the same thing.
And that then the last decision we have from the regional director on this election, you know what? That's exactly what she said. Her voter eligibility and her unit inclusion are exactly the same. She has these people excluded from the unit because they couldn't vote. And nothing could be more undemocratic than saying, you can't vote. And yet, as I said, the day after the certification, you hundreds of people are now in the unit. And people who really, if you try to analyze what part-timers are, the lack of time they have, it defines a casual employee. And the board tries to justify this by saying that, well, there really is a community of interest here because these people do the same thing as the other adjuncts. Well, that's true in any casual situation. If you have a part-time teacher or a temporary teacher, a sub who comes in to teach a class, they teach. That's what they do. That doesn't mean they belong in a unit with regular full-time employees who are there all the time. Just because they perform the same functions as the people who are in the unit, you don't put them in. In fact, all of that goes to the definition of casual employee.
All right, so your position is your one statement was enough to raise the issue and preserve your rights.
Well, certainly in light of what the regional director found in her second decision.
No, but I mean, that's your position, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the board disagreed with that and said all of these issues could have been raised during the representational hearing. And your response there is you thought you had won on that issue.
Your Honor, we didn't put that footnote in. The regional director did. And it wasn't in the prior decision that we objected to and wrote the letter about, the one that we said made no sense. And now she says, okay, here's one that makes sense. But most importantly, Your Honor, the decision is 2 pages long, the second decision. Clearly there's a new footnote. Clearly it's exactly what we wanted. There's no rationale about any of this contained in that decision. She doesn't explain at all why there's a new footnote, a new definition of casual that she didn't include in the prior decision. Under those circumstances, minimally, you can't add these people to the unit. Secondly, if you think it has to be developed, you can send it back and have a hearing on whether they belong in the unit, and I don't think the board has any case law that would support that. And finally, if you think, okay, they do belong in the unit for some reason that we don't necessarily agree with because we don't, there's evidence in here to make that determination, but not enough to put them in the unit. And if you agree with that, then you can't say, okay, the election was okay because all these people were disenfranchised. It is so contrary to the purposes of the act that you just can't put them in the unit when they haven't been permitted to vote.
If you're right, though, that the issue was raised, that the board was wrong and not concerning, we would remand the case, right? You're not suggesting that we go ahead and decide the merits of this issue, are you?
Well, we didn't get a hearing. You could remand it or you could dismiss the UC petition and say we're right, just like she said in her second decision, that these people are not in the unit.
No. My point is the board never addressed that question, correct, as to who was in the unit. It simply said
the board
raised it. So wouldn't we send it back to the board to decide that question?
I believe you're correct, Your Honor, but the board would have to send it back to the region for hearing.
Yeah, but you're not suggesting we shouldn't decide the question here. We have nothing to review. We don't have a decision from the board on the merits.
Not on the merits. And in fact, they said in the footnote, they said in their footnote that
right.
We better examine this because something is amiss.
Right. But we can't do that. You agree we can't do that now.
I think there's enough on this record, Your Honor, that you could dismiss the UC petition and say that they haven't established, the only decision we have from the Labor Board down below is that these people don't belong, and there's enough on the record to tell you they don't belong. 42 hours a year, Your Honor. Someone who teaches 42 hours a year, you can't put them in a unit. That's the essence of a casual employee.
If the board went ahead and decided that question, wouldn't we review that with a great deal of deference?
Deference would be correct.
Okay.
We would have
so
to be.
We don't have anything to defer to or not to defer to since it hasn't decided that question.
Right. They have not said that.
Okay.
Why don't we hear from the board and then we'll give you a minute in rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Ron. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Elizabeth Heaney, and I represent the National Labor Relations Board, which is here today to seek enforcement of its order requiring the university to bargain with the union. As this court has just noted, before we can get to the issue of whether or not those who were not eligible to vote were properly included in the unit, you first need to determine whether the university's failure to properly litigate the appropriate scope of the unit, as well as any particular exclusions that it sought from the unit, whether its failure to raise those issues at the representation proceeding precludes the university from challenging those issues before this court. The board submits, and the rule is quite clear, that a party is not entitled to relitigate in a subsequent refusal to bargain proceeding any issues that could have or should have been raised.
All right, so the argument is counsel stated the two should be the same.
Correct.
Their eligibility and membership in the bargaining unit. And then secondly, when the regional director issued her subsequent decision, saw the footnote, thought he had won on that issue and therefore had no reason to raise anything more in the representation hearing.
I can respond to both of those.
All right.
First, with the statement that the voter eligibility and unit eligibility are intertwined, that statement was in the transcript. However, no further elaboration was put forth by the counsel for the university. And
why
it's important.
Why did he have to say anything more?
I'm sorry?
Why did he have to say more?
Because at that point, the hearing had been reopened, at the university's request, if you look at the order that reopened the hearing, the order reopened the hearing at the university's request because the university had stated that there was not enough evidence to determine the appropriateness of the unit. So the region reopened the record, issued an order specifically stating why they reopened the record, and as you noted, the hearing officer began the hearing by saying, I'm reopening the record, it's time to determine the appropriate scope of the unit and to determine voter eligibility. And no less than three times, the employer or the university was directly asked, can you please state your position, elaborate, please tell me what your position is with regard to the unit that's been put forward by the union. And the university's response was, no, not at this time. First, I have some motions to make. He had numerous opportunities, or the university had numerous opportunities, to put forward the unit, to respond to what the union itself had put forward, and the university never did so. With regard to the typo on the April 7th order amending, as much as the university would like, that typo is not a life preserver saving it from its failure to litigate the issue. That typo is what it is. It's a typo. And I can take you through several ways that that typo could have been discovered. If you look at the order amending, which is in your joint appendix, page 16, it purports to set forth the regional director's March 26th decision and direction of election. And she is quoting herself, supposedly quoting that March 26th decision and direction of election. And the footnotes, footnote 1 and 2, are meant to correspond to footnote 12 and 13 of the decision and direction of election. And the contested language, quote, or otherwise set forth above, unquote, was never included in the original decision and direction of election. She has misquoted herself. And the final word on the appropriate scope of the unit, or on the unit itself, is on page 2 of the amended order, where the casual employees definition has been eliminated, completely eliminated from the definition. And if you also notice that the certificate of representation that was issued and the notice of election, which was plastered all over the university campus and was placed at the polling stations, no longer contained the contested language. And the university must have seen that and never questioned it, and then waited
for... Could I just ask you there, counsel? So at that point, the board rules would have allowed counsel to have come back to the regional director and made its objections clear?
Correct. Yes. The elimination of the casual employees requirement, the elimination of that definition also should have been made apparent to the university, because it asked to the regional director to explain herself with regard to the casual employees definition. Why would you set forth, the university claimed it made no sense. Why would you say casual employees ineligible to vote are so-and-so? Well, if they're casual, they're not eligible to vote. And she agreed, and she eliminated that definition. It's eliminated completely on the second page of the order amending, and it's set forth quite clearly. It is hereby ordered that the unit description is as follows. And that language, again, was mirrored in the certificate of representation and the notice of election. And also on April 8th, when the university filed its petition for review, it did not note. It had this order at that point. This was April 7th, and it did not note in its petition for review any issue with regard to that. So the university just should not be allowed to remain silent on an issue during the entirety of the representation proceeding, allow the election to go forward, have the union get certified, and then sit down at the bargaining table and raise something that it should have or could have litigated before. With regard to the merits, if I can move on there, if you have no other questions regarding the university's failure to adequately address the scope of the unit during the representation proceedings, I'll move on to the merits regarding the inclusion of...
I'd like to clarify one point.
Sure.
The board's position then is... I want to be clear what the board is relying on here. The board doesn't tell me in its opinion. It just says it wasn't raised. But is it relying on the fact that these notices were posted everywhere, so the university should have seen, could have seen, and therefore could have had the opportunity to come back to the board? Or is the board relying on the fact that there was a typographical error?
Your Honor, I actually think that that's two facets that the board is jointly relying on in its argument. One is that footnote 2 on the April 5th.
I have a third for you.
Okay.
That's that in the unit clarification proceeding, the university was asked on three separate occasions what its position, and it refused to state. Just want to be sure.
Well, it wasn't just a minor correction. It wasn't the unit clarification proceeding that was held. It was an actual representation hearing. Okay. I think that, the story, so to speak, of the board's position goes like this. A hearing was held to determine the scope of the unit. The university never chose to litigate or raise its issues regarding the scope of the unit. It had some questions once the unit description was set forth. The regional director answered those questions on April 5th, and the final word on the unit description was the page 2 of the amended order, to which the university, again, never posed any objections.
Okay, thank you.
With regard to the merits, whether or not you can include those who were not able to vote in the representation election in the unit itself, this court has held that the board is allowed to narrow the franchise the way that it did here. Just recently in Sitka Seafoods, this court agreed with the board's narrowing of the franchise, and the board properly did so here. It properly...
Well, the university says these are not, shrimp seasonal employment type situation, and that the board's president on adjuncts heretofore has equated voting and membership.
If I understand your question, are you asking why this case is similar to Sitka Seafoods? Is that what you're asking?
Well, that is my understanding of the university's position is that Sitka Foods is distinguishable and on its facts, and then secondly, that heretofore the board has consistently treated adjuncts as both eligible to vote and in the bargaining unit.
The board will readily admit that the university is not a salmon cannery place. However, the board will state that given both the salmon cannery facility and the university are atypical employment settings that don't have your regular 40-hour work week. And in cases like that, the board is allowed to tailor its eligibility formulas to ensure that only those employees who have a concrete and continuing interest in the unit is eligible to vote. With regard to, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You have me confused. What decision are we reviewing? If we go to the merits, what are we reviewing?
What you're reviewing ultimately is the region's unit clarification decision where the regional director...
Why would we do that? Wouldn't we send it back to the board if we think it was properly raised?
Why would you? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the last of that.
I'm sorry. Why would we do that? Why wouldn't the board? The only decision we have from the board is that this issue was never contested, right?
No, it was never. It was never contested. The parties.
So we don't have a decision from the board on the merits.
You have a decision from the board regarding the clarification of the unit. The issue was never in terms of. If you want to know what a casual employee is, it would be what board precedent has said a casual employee is, and it was up to the university to say.
But if we think that because of the confusion created by the board itself, that the issue was contested, wouldn't we remand it to the board to decide the issue?
If that's ultimately what you would decide, if you decided that the footnote was indeed the life preserver that the university wishes it to be, right, then you would remand, Your Honor. I noticed that. I have just a few moments left, and if there are no further questions, I would just ask the board to ask the court to enforce the board's order requiring the university to bargain with the union. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll give you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very quickly, when these things were posted all over the university had no concerns because when they had to give their list of eligible voters for the election, none of these people would be on it because the voter eligibility excluded them unless they had that kind of background. And no one could have imagined the minute after that vote, they said, okay, you disenfranchised all these people. Now you're going to put them in the unit. The purposes of the act are served by allowing people who are going to be in a unit to vote, not to disenfranchise them. And all of the adjunct cases that you see when they change voter eligibility and unit inclusion, they expand the voter eligibility to bring more people in to vote because they're going to be in the unit. They don't narrow it so that people can't vote, and then they're going to sneak them into the unit. And just one comment on the stray inadvertent error, and perhaps I made one before, Your Honor. I'd be happy if this went back to the board. I understand your question a little bit better now. I would like them to look at what they did here in terms of casuals and putting them in the unit, and whether these people, if they belonged in the unit, can't vote. I just can't imagine the board looking at it and saying that's the case. But this is not, we've all made errors. You know, we transpose things the wrong way. The board in its brief, in this case on page 30, they accused the union of being duplicitous. And I know they didn't mean the union, they meant the university. That's a typographical error. It's not, or you transpose words. Disingenuous, I'm sorry, that's the word they use. That's a typographical error, it's a Scrivener's error. You can fix those. This is a 34-word paragraph in a new constructed footnote that specifically makes reference to the prior footnote. That's not an inadvertent error. They said, you know, it was, where did it come from? It came from the law. That's the law. That footnote lays out what the law is under the National Labor Relations Act, and that is that you can't voter eligibility and unit inclusion are the same unless you have some special circumstances where you're going to expand the right to vote, not contract it and take away people's right to vote whether they're going to be in a union.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Take the case under advisement.